This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
The federal government indicts a former pilot for Boeing's troubled 737 MAX, a model that crashed twice. Plus, the back and forth over the Texas abortion law, a judge now says it can go back into effect. And there are millions of people out of work and millions of open jobs. How long can that disconnect last?
Nobody's really convinced or certain at this point that we're going to find an equilibrium that works both for employers and for people who want jobs.
It is Friday, October 15th. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A former Boeing pilot has been indicted for allegedly lying to air safety regulators about a flight control system that was later blamed for two crashes. Mark Forkner was the chief technical pilot for Boeing's 737 MAX jet. Two of those planes crashed in 2018 and 2019, killing 346 people. Federal prosecutors charged Forkner with fraud for his role in persuading the FAA to approve training materials that excluded information about the flight control system. He's due in court Friday. His attorney and Boeing declined to comment. Lebanon is in a day of mourning after six people were killed in Beirut during sectarian fighting. The violence between Shiite and Christian groups erupted after tensions over a probe into last year's port blast boiled over. Nazih Hasseran, a reporter for the Journal in Beirut, says the fighting comes amid an economic freefall in Lebanon.
The collapse of the currency skyrocketed prices across the spectrum. Gas is more expensive, food is more expensive. Electricity is now rare because fuel is too expensive. And generally, the economy has imploded, whereby the most basic of things have become out of reach for most people.
Lebanon's 15-year civil war ended in 1990. A Texas law effectively restricting abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy can remain in effect while it's being challenged. The federal appeals court ruling postpones an earlier one from a lower federal court that prevented enforcement of the law. It prohibits doctors from performing the procedure if there's a detectable fetal heartbeat, and it deputizes private citizens to enforce it. The U.S. Department of Justice has sued Texas over the law. And Bill Clinton is in the hospital. A spokesman for the former president says he was admitted to UC Irvine Medical Center Tuesday with an infection unrelated to COVID-19. His office says he's recovering, but it did not say when he would be released. Shares of Macy's rose in late trading yesterday after we reported that activist investor Yana Partners has taken a stake in the retail giant. Yana is urging Macy's to spin off its fast-growing e-commerce business, echoing a similar move by Saks Fifth Avenue. The moves come amid the continued shift to online sales from brick-and-mortar stores. For more, we are joined by the Journal's Heard on the Street columnist, Rochelle Toplinski. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi, Peter.
Macy's has been hit hard by the pandemic, and its e-commerce business has kept it afloat. So what does it get by spinning it off?
Yana Partners has argued in a letter that Macy's e-commerce business could be worth many more times than its current share price. A similar spinoff of Saks Fifth Avenue's e-commerce business allowed it to raise extra cash at that higher multiple, and its management said that it would invest that cash to improve its online business, so to help make shipping faster, returns easier, and to improve online customer service.
How's Macy's reacted?
Well, they haven't reacted publicly yet, but their response to an activist campaign a few years ago, which at the time was pushing it to spin out its real estate assets, at that point, Macy argued to keep the business together and looked into other alternatives to a spin out.
There is a lot of pressure on retailers right now. We will get some data for the sector later today. Sales aren't looking so good, are they?
Yeah, the numbers out today are expected to show a bit of a dip, but that sort of hides a mixed picture. So what you need to really do is you strip out a fall in new car sales, which are down because there's a shortage of cars available to buy. And so when you pull that out of the numbers, it looks like people are actually spending more on a range of things, from eating out to sort of delayed back to school shopping. Obviously, part of that rise is down to the higher prices that we're seeing with inflation coming up too, though.
Rochelle Teplinski is a Heard on the Street columnist for the Journal. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Peter. You too.
And coming up, there are millions of open jobs in the U.S. right now and millions of people not filling them. A look at that growing disconnect and its long-term effects in the economy.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The worker shortage that emerged amid the pandemic could be permanent. And if not forever, it is expected to last for years to come. The U.S. today has a lower workforce participation rate than it did when the pandemic began, and that has massive long-term consequences on wealth, on opportunity, on what types of jobs will even exist in the future. People are out of work for a whole host of reasons, some by choice, others forced out of the workforce, and all the while, employers just cannot seem to hire who they need. Lauren Weber is on the team of reporters who wrote a big story about that disconnect, and she joins us now. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Peter.
Lauren, I want to begin with a story. Tell us about Jesse Stromwick.
Sure. Jesse worked at a software company in Portland, Oregon. He was a software engineering manager, so he was managing a bunch of software developers. It was a good job, lots of hours. He expected to stay in that field for a long time and climb the corporate ladder. And things changed for him during the pandemic. He said it was just a kind of a sense of constantly putting out fires one after another. The stress is piled up. During the pandemic, he had a son. His son was born. And he just realized at a certain point, maybe his job wasn't worth all the sacrifices it required.
And could a person like Jesse go out today and find a job?
He could probably find a job immediately. In fact, when he did start to realize he was getting so burnt out and really needed a change in his life, he did start looking for other jobs. But he said he just didn't quite feel inspired by any of the options that came his way. Now, he's very lucky. He had a lot of options. If he wanted to, he could get a job tomorrow, probably. But that's not what he did.
He's in a fortunate position. And I want you to tell us now about somebody else, Diane Seeley. Tell us about how Diane ended up out of work in the pandemic.
So Diane was a housekeeper, a senior housekeeper at a big hotel in Boston, kind of a historic hotel. She'd had that job for about 35 years. And she expected to retire probably in the next few years or so. That was her plan. She's 63 years old right now. So pandemic begins, and of course, the travel industry just craters. So at first, she was furloughed from her job. That was back in March 2020. Furloughed for about 6 months, waited to get called back. And then in September of that year, she and a few hundred of her coworkers were told that they were actually being terminated. They weren't being called back. At 63, she said, I just don't think I have it in me to start over somewhere new. She had some medical and health problems. She had a lot of seniority at her previous job. She loved her coworkers. She expected that that was where she was going to retire from. She just didn't think it was going to happen so quickly.
Yeah, it started new and started at a much lower pay wage, I imagine.
Yeah, she had earned her way up to about $25 an hour, which is a pretty good wage for somebody in a relatively, you know, low-paying industry.
Those are two different stories, two seemingly very different sets of circumstances. And I want to know, who is not working right now? You have the stories of Jesse's, you have the stories of Diane's. Is this something that cuts across all strata of the country in the economy?
The data shows that this is very broad-based. It's not just people without college degrees. It's not just women, although those are two of the groups that have been most heavily affected by some of the reasons people are dropping out of the workforce. But we're really seeing it across the board. And there's no one reason. You know, some of it, for some of it, it's driven by retirement, you know, older people who lost their jobs. There really is a lot of age discrimination in the workplace. For other people, it's a childcare issue. Either they can't find a space in a daycare center. We know that childcare is among the industries that are having a hard time hiring people, partly because it's very low paid and it's very difficult work, as anyone who's ever had children knows. And so they can't hire enough people. That means they can offer fewer spaces to families. Some families can't get those spaces. And also the costs are going up. So more families have to make that calculation of, is it worth the cost as the costs go up? And in some cases, people, mainly women, are choosing instead to stay home with their kids. And that takes them out of the workforce for a while.
We are more than a year and a half into this pandemic. Did economists predict or expect that this deep into this, we would have this labor shortage?
It is surprising on so many levels. You know, we had this huge economic shock when the pandemic first began and all the lockdowns took place. That drove millions and millions of people out of work. And normally when you have high unemployment, the idea is workers are eager to get back to work. And the problem is employers are not hiring quickly enough or the demand isn't there. The exact opposite thing is happening right now, where there's lots and lots of demand for products, for services. Employers are desperate to hire, and yet workers don't want to come back. They don't see it as worth it right now to rejoin the labor force and take a job for all kinds of reasons.
We should say that people are still leaving the workforce. I mean, more than 4 million people quit their jobs in August, right?
Yes, and that was a record.
Lauren, what needs to change? What is going to get people back into the jobs that need to be filled? And I understand that's a big, not one size fits all question.
Well, theoretically, the labor market should find some equilibrium at some point. Wages should rise enough to incentivize more people to come back to the workforce. You know, companies are offering signing bonuses. They're adding benefits. We've heard from companies that you wouldn't normally think would try to offer a little more flexibility or more remote work options. These are all the kinds of things that workers talk about wanting or needing coming out of this pandemic. So presumably, employers will start to offer more of what workers want, and that will draw people back in. But I think nobody's really convinced or certain at this point that that's going to happen and that we're going to find an equilibrium that works both for employers and for people who want jobs.
Lauren Weber writes about the workplace for the Journal. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, if you were hoping to go to space anytime soon, you are better off booking a more earthly vacation. Virgin Galactic has postponed the launch of its commercial space flights until the end of next year after delays in resolving a supplier component issue. When the private space flights resume, they will set you back at least $450,000 a seat. And for that, you had better get some out-of-this-world service. And that's what's news for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.